This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 326, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Schwert, and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Thanks for hanging out with us. About to bring on good friend Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal-World. He's saying something to make Derek laugh during the break. What were you guys chumming it up about? Let me bring Matt on and ask him, actually. Matt, what were you saying to my producer, chumming it up with Derek? It's supposed to be working, not having fun.
It was just fascinating stuff. He called, I answered, I said, good evening. He said, well, is it technically really even evening? Wow. And you know, great point by him, and that's kind of one that slipped past me there, because it is only 3:27 now.
Matt, I'm gonna break this down for you, man, because I like you and I don't want you to get the runaround here. I think Derek was giving you fake laughs. I think he was giving you courtesy laughs. I'm not gonna let him do that to you. I just want to be up front and let you know right now.
Well, let me finish this though, just in case. And I appreciate your, that's just solid friendship moves right there. But let me finish this just in case.
Okay.
And then you can evaluate. So I said, no, you know, it's probably not evening. 3:30 does not really very often qualify as evening. However, this morning I was fortunate enough to give a talk or speak with or to or whatever the Breakfast Optimist Club here in Lawrence, 40 or 50 people of that club that get together and have breakfast once a week, I think, and have guest speakers and have a lot of fun and just clown around and that kind of thing. So I was, like I said, fortunate enough to be asked to do that today. And that forced me to get up about 4 or 5 hours earlier than I normally do.
Wow.
So I am shifting everything ahead. So even though it's only 3:30 now, it feels to me like a good 7:30, 8:30, somewhere in there. So, you know, I was kind of trying to use that with Derek, and I think he kind of said, well, that's fair, and I said, I appreciate it, and then he laughed at me.
Yeah, fake laugh. He's a faker.
Okay.
Derek, you can defend yourself if you want to, but you were clearly fake laughing at Matt, which is not a nice thing to do.
I don't appreciate the defamation.
I don't think it is. Because Matt, to be completely honest, fake laughing is no laughing matter, if we're being completely fair here. And
I
don't take it lightly.
Right now.
When I'm laughing at you, it's all genuine, 100% of the time.
Fair. All right. Well, I'm glad we set some ground rules here. I mean, here's what happened, too, whether it's in person or on the phone or whatever. From now until the end of time, until the next eclipse at the very least, I am going to always question when I hear Derek laugh, whether it's on
your
show and I'm listening on my drive. Whether it's in person, whether it's when I call, I think that's a lot you just put on him right there. Because I have a very keen ear and a very keen eye, and I'm going to be watching that guy.
Don't worry. I think Nick's just mad because he says I don't laugh at enough of his jokes.
Oh, that's probably what's happening here.
Well, no, he's a bad fake laugher. And that's the thing. I am a grade A fake laugher. So even if I did fake laugh at you, Matt, you'd have no idea. Like,
that's
when I fake laugh,
right.
It sounds genuine. My fake laugh is better than most people's real laugh. So Derek's a bad fake laugher, and even then, he hardly ever laughs at anything I say when I know he thinks it's funny. Okay, that one
great.
Was a little bit,
that
was a little
was
much
great.
There.
I loved it. My only question, do you think he's listening? Because maybe that's why he's not laughing.
He's not. Let me pull this curtain back and show you how the sausage is made a little bit. Derek very rarely is paying attention to anything I'm doing or saying on the show. He's gramming, he's tweeting, he's Snapchatting,
yeah,
Facebooking.
Buy things on Amazon.
Yeah, he's doing everything other than what he's supposed to be doing.
Well, maybe that's why you guys work.
That's right. He's a good yin to my yang. We got Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World on with us. So it's sounding like KU's not going to get this Mitchell Robinson guy, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way. You know, there's a lot of talk coming from his side of things that says he's very seriously considering just not playing anywhere this year. And, you know, to each his own, I don't know that that's the best decision. But it's not my player. It's not my relative. It's not my concern, really. I mean, and I doubt he cares what I think. So I don't like it. I don't like the trend. I don't like that it could potentially set up this line of thinking for other kids in the future. And it just seems odd to me. I mean, it seems to me maybe we're too close to it. But whether you're talking about Bill Self or otherwise, it seems to me like going to a college environment for a year, whether that's Kansas or New Orleans or LSU or whatever, Western Kentucky, where he was originally signed, going there for a year, even if you're not going to play, let's say you're ineligible like he would be if he transferred, most likely, you're getting so many advantages out of that year. You're getting coaching, you're getting structure, you're traveling, you're getting film work, you're getting nutrition, you're getting weight room stuff. So I think that by passing on that, you're making a big-time mistake. Now, if he does pass on it, there's no doubt that he's going to hire a personal trainer. He's probably going to hire an agent. He's going to work out constantly. He's going to play. He's going to improve. He's going to try to play pickup wherever he can, those types of things. So it's not as if he'll just be sitting around, watching reruns of Friends for an entire year and then try to go to the NBA. So I don't want to be completely unfair to him if that's what he ends up doing, but I still think whether you could hire the best personal trainer in the world, it doesn't, to me, bring you the same benefits that going to a place like Kansas and learning from Self and playing against a guy like Udoka Azubuike and getting the benefits of Andrea Hootie. I don't think he can do anything on his own that can even approach the level of quality products and things that he would be able to get out of doing that at Kansas or any other school for that matter. So it seems weird, but without having talked to the kid himself or anyone in his family or anything like that, who knows what the line of thinking is.
We got Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World on with us here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. If you're not going to play college ball, why would you just go overseas? You get all those things you just mentioned and you get paid.
That's exactly it. Yeah, that, and I'm glad you mentioned it because I think that's exactly right. You would make some money and you would still have some structure and you would see another part of the world. I mean, I guess you risk injury, and maybe that's the answer. But you risk injury if you're running around in an empty gym by yourself with your trainer too. I mean, that kind of stuff can happen anywhere. So, I don't understand it. And again, nothing's been finalized. Nothing's been decided, but it sounds like KU is not planning on signing him. It sounds like LSU backed off recruiting him after he visited there first. So that's weird to me too, because everything that I've heard about this guy, including from some people at Western Kentucky, is that he's a good kid and people like him. And it doesn't sound like, at least I haven't believed until this point, that it's any kind of a personality flaw or anything like that. I think people like him a lot. Maybe he's just getting some bad advice. Maybe he's just going down the wrong path for some reason or another. It doesn't seem like it's fully resolved yet. Like I said, that report that we saw was just saying that he was basically considering or seriously considering sitting out the season and not playing anywhere at all. So, people consider things all the time. Derek considers whether to laugh at you or not, and then he doesn't. So, it could be something that changes in a matter of minutes. It could change overnight. It could change three times overnight. So it's not a done deal by any means, but it's definitely been a wild thing to follow. And especially with the McDonald's All-American, a seven-footer, such a good talent. I mean, it doesn't happen very often with these types of guys. I mean, they're usually scooped up and a big part of everybody's plans.
Well, maybe probably this was in the back of my mind initially when I found out that KU was going after him and that he was coming on an official visit, but maybe it was more of a just pursuing it, even though you know it's a small likelihood that he's going to come to KU or that he's even going to be eligible to play, just because you had an available roster spot, you needed some help, so they thought, why not? Probably not going to work, but it's worth pursuing.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think that's probably exactly what happened on KU's side of it. I mean, because, they've made a lot about the Dedrick Lawson, KJ Lawson, Charlie Moore, Malik Newman last year. You know, they've made a lot out of that, and the benefits that having those guys, even though they're not eligible at the time, having those guys in practice to push your starting five, to push your regular rotation guys, that's a big deal. I mean, when you're able to put somebody like Devontae Graham up against Malik Newman last year in practice instead of that being Tyler Self in practice, that's a big deal, and that's preparing and developing Devontae Graham's game. And so there's no question that KU would benefit from it if he decided to come here. But if he comes for the year and sits out and never plays and then jumps to the NBA anyway, maybe it's not worth the headache of trying to get him eligible this year and all of that. Because we've seen that. You know, we've seen that plenty in the recent past. Whether it's Sheck Diallo or Cliff Alexander or different guys like that, you know, not exactly eligibility or the same apples-to-apples type of concerns, but still something where KU's had to, you know, do some paperwork and make some calls and go through a process to try to get a guy eligible. And, you know, maybe that is not always worth it. So it's interesting. It's definitely worth following to the end because everybody's been following it along so far. But, at this point, it sure seems like he may end up not playing anywhere. And that would be weird. It would be weird to remember his name if that's the case and then to see, you know, next June when the draft rolls around again, where does he go? Does he go at all? And where does his career go from there?
And it's crazy to think about that we've seen guys in his position before who are trying to gain eligibility, and if they don't get it, maybe they'll sit out, maybe they'll go play overseas. But all of those guys had academic concerns or things that were brought about because of an investigation or because the NCAA wasn't sure what was going on. This is a case where a guy just made a poor decision out of high school, right? Because that's what you chalk it up to, is he probably should have never committed to Western Kentucky in the first place. He kind of brought it on himself. Not to pile it on the guy, but that's the reality of it.
No, there's no doubt. And, I mean, it just, you know, I get it. I get family. I get the pull of wanting to play for someone who you're close to. His godfather was a member of that Western Kentucky coaching staff and is no longer, and that caused the change of heart. And so I can understand that. But, man, if you fancy yourself a lottery pick, which you know, in one of the most recent mock drafts, he was slated in that 14 spot, the very last pick of the lottery. So if that's what you think you are, if you're a McDonald's All-American, if you're a future pro, I just don't get the idea of that. I mean, you can have a great relationship and connection and even a basketball connection with your godfather without going to play for a school like Western Kentucky that you may regret, you know, making that move. And that's not even to say that he would have had to sign with Kansas or Kentucky or Duke or whatever. You know, I mean, he could have absolutely picked LSU right away or something like that. But, you know, more exposure, more competition. I mean, you know, those things are things that maybe he overlooked a little bit in that initial decision. And part of it was. You know, the story goes even deeper than that, because the coach at Western Kentucky was an assistant at Texas A&M, where he originally committed. So there is clearly a connection beyond just his godfather. I mean, he obviously enjoys, I think Rick Stansberry is his name, and you know, he obviously likes that guy and has a connection with him because he was willing to go to A&M, where he had initially orally committed, and then once Stansberry got the job at Western Kentucky, followed him there and committed there too. So it may go beyond just the godfather connection, and sometimes that's cool too. I mean, sometimes you do just have a connection with the coach, and regardless of school or colors or mascot or conference or any of that stuff, you just want to play for that guy, and maybe that's what happened here. But, it's too bad because, you know, not that long ago, just a couple of months ago, this kid was, you know, really, really loved at Western Kentucky and was – had the people there excited and was kind of one of those rare guys who has the five-star pedigree, has the All-American talent, has the NBA body and future, and instead of picking one of the blue bloods, he picked a school like Western Kentucky. That that was a cool story right there, and everybody was loving that. And then now here he is, really kind of just spiraling downward, and nobody knows where it's going to land or how this is going to end up. So you can't help but feel for the kid a little bit.
We're talking to Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. So if these reports from John Rothstein of FanRag are to be believed, and Mitchell Robinson isn't going to come to KU, let alone any college program, it seems like we know exactly what this team is going to look like, and they are going to have one available scholarship that's going to go unused this year. Only three guys in the front court. You take everything together. You saw this team up close and personal for four games in Italy. What is kind of your overall feeling about this team's makeup heading into this season?
Yeah, I don't think that was a make or break thing. I think they would probably move into the season without filling the scholarship, and that's okay. I think they're comfortable doing that. I think Bill Self really liked what he saw in Italy. I think the way that those four veteran guards, and at this point, even though he hasn't played at Kansas, you count Malik Newman as a veteran because he's a mature dude. He's been around. He's been in college for a few years. This will be his third. You know, he fits in. He fits into that group. So you've got Newman and Graham and C and Vic, and those guys play great together. They play fast. They can all shoot. They can all, you know, help each other out. I think Bill Self really liked what he saw in that group, maybe even more than he expected. And when you consider that those guys are in place and that using them for a good chunk of the minutes per game together is very, very similar to what he did last year with Josh Jackson as that fourth guard out there. You know, he liked that too, and that worked very well. I mean, they had a great year, and none of these guys is Josh Jackson, but that doesn't mean personnel-wise they can't make it work the same way. So I think the fact that that was fresh in his mind and that small lineup last year worked so well, I think that gives him a great deal of confidence knowing, okay, we can do the same sort of thing here, you know, and kind of make that work again. So I think there's a lot to like. I think Azubuike, provided he can stay healthy and stay in shape and stay out of foul trouble, you know, he's not going to have to play 35 minutes a game, but they need him to get close to 30. And if he can do that, nobody has a guy like that, you know, that they'll face. So he brings a different element even than they had last year. So there's plenty to like about this team. Speed, experience, there's no reason to think that they won't be every bit as good as anybody could have hoped and expected and you know, basically what we've sort of become accustomed to for the last decade and a half.
You know, you kind of just touched on this, but I thought that last year the defining quality, the defining characteristic of that team, the theme was kind of toughness. And we know that Bill Self obviously preaches that every single year, perhaps more than anything else. But with Frank Mason and Josh Jackson and even a guy like Landon Lucas, I just thought this team really embodied that spirit a year ago. What do you think the defining characteristic of this year's team is going to be?
Yeah, that's a great point, and I agree. I mean, Josh Jackson was as tough as they come. Frank Mason, even tougher than that. I mean, yeah, those guys, they were. And they weren't just tough physically. They were tough mentally, and they were tough when they were down, and they were tough in some tough spots, you know. So that is a great call, and I don't know if they'll be able to match that. Probably not. I mean, they could be a really tough team, but I don't know that they'll be that tough. But I do think one of the characteristics that will define this team is speed. I really do. I mean, Self talked a lot about that when we were over in Italy, and he talked kind of, you know, almost in a like, oh my gosh, kind of way. I mean, these guys are fast, and when you talk about those four guards that we mentioned already, and you talk about a guy like Billy Preston too, who, you know, he'll figure it out in time, and he's already physically where they want him to be, and physically as impressive as any freshman probably can be. So you know, you put a guy like that out there on the floor too, at the three or the four, and that's another guy, a big body, who can get up and down and those long strides, likes to run the floor. I mean, that's another element of speed from a position that you don't expect it, you know. So I think this team will be will be very, very much built upon that, and will have that as sort of their identity. And you know, that's funny to say when you talk about Azubuike, because there's nothing about that guy that talks or that speaks speed. You know, he's a huge presence in the paint on both ends of the floor, but that being there really allows the rest of that group to get out and run, and you know, that especially on the defensive end, if he can control the lane and kind of take care of the glass, and as soon as the shot goes up, two or three of those guys can take off knowing that he's going to get it, and then fire an outlet pass, and then they're really putting the defense on their heels. That's going to be fun to watch, and it's going to be tough to beat. So I think they're going to preach and try to emphasize speed as much as probably ever. And all those guys that we've mentioned are certainly capable of filling that role and being dangerous in it.
Yeah, that's kind of my question. It's kind of like first world problems, like when you have question marks about this Kansas team because of how talented they are. But I do kind of wonder, is Azubuike's size and strength in the way that he kind of opposes everything that the front court's going to have to offer with everything you just mentioned, mainly that speed, is it going to counteract each other? Are they going to kind of work together like that? Or is it going to be a case where his lack of speed and ability to run and the lack of depth in the front court kind of cancels out what you have from the speed in the front court? Either way, like, worst case scenario, this team's still going to be a top 10 team in the country, but if they're able to find that perfect balance, then it could be a really dangerous mix that we haven't really seen at Kansas, at least over the past couple of years.
Right. No, totally agree. And you know, I was looking back at some of those games he did play. I mean, he played in 11 games last year. He started, I think, six. The second half of that, you know, his second five or six games and then those last three or four starts that he made, I think you really started to see him look comfortable, and I think you started to see some glimpses of what that could look like. And you know, it obviously was a big blow when he went down to that team, and they still had a great year without him. But, you know, I think every Kansas fan out there has mentioned to me at one point or another that they still wonder what a difference he would have made. And it's fair to do that. I mean, he would have been an enormous help on just about everything they did, and they may have played differently too. So, you know, there's no telling exactly what it would have done to the way the season would have played out. But, you know, you did start to see him get comfortable, and you did start to see the way they play. And a lot of it was still built on those guards getting out and going. And a lot of it was them having a lot of trust in him, especially on the offensive end. I mean, that's a guy that, you know, if you beat your man and you get your shoulders past him and you get turned toward the basket, well, there you're going to draw help, and then basically all you have to do is throw it up, and he'll go find it. And as we saw in Italy, he'll try to bring the rim down, you know. And so that's a huge factor, and that's easy points right there. So I want to look back at that a little more. I want to see a little bit more if there are any hints of just how well that can work together. And again, it's hard to do that because when you're looking at that first 11 games that he played last year, you're looking at it with guys like Jackson and Frank Mason on the floor, and those guys won't be out there this year, but there's still plenty of talent around him. And you know, it'll be interesting to see just how quickly he fits into that. Self was talking the other day about his conditioning, and, you know, he said he still needs to get a little lighter, lose a few pounds, and make sure that he can stay out there as much as possible. And I think it's as much to keep him out of foul trouble so that he can move his feet and be good and sound defensively so that he's not fouling because he's tired. But it's also, I think, about exactly that. You know, I mean, he's not going to sprint up and down the floor like a blur or anything like that. But I do think that he's got a chance to fill a role as a trail type of guy that could be pretty menacing, you know, they need him to be able to do that. And I know he's capable, and I know he's willing. You know, that guy right now, he wants to dominate, and he'll do anything that they ask him to do. So it will be fun to watch. It will be fun to watch him develop, but it'll be fun, as you mentioned, to watch, I guess, both parts kind of come together and how well do they mesh.
It's Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal-World. Check out his work in the LJ World or at KUSports.com. Appreciate the time as always, Matt.
Many thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Always fun.
All right, thank you. That is Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World. I'm Nick Schwert. This is Rock Jock Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Up next, this week in useless NFL coaching audio.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
About 20 minutes from now, we'll be joined by the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis. That coming up at 4:15. Kevin Flaherty going to join us at 5 o'clock to talk some Big 12 football. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert, and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. But before we do any of that, it's our favorite time of the week. It is time to let you hear from the most useless NFL coaching soundbites from week 3 of the NFL preseason.
Another big week for us here.
I thought we had a really good camp.
Tom has really had a good camp.
Every day is an important day for us.
They did a good job preparing themselves.
We've got a good team.
All three of them did a pretty nice job in that.
Every day is important.
They overcame all the different obstacles.
We got a good bunch of guys.
All three of them did a pretty nice job in that.
He does a good job in the room.
He's done an excellent job of that up to this point in his career.
Deshaun is a very, very good young player.
Every opportunity is important.
He's done an excellent job of that up to this point in his career.
He's playing really well.
It's all important to me.
I thought he did a really good job of that throughout camp.
He's just taking it day by day.
Well, Devin had a real good offseason.
Ramek did well in the game.
He made a lot of big plays.
He's playing really well.
I thought Maga played well. And
he made plays underneath.
Tom's playing well this camp.
Aligwe played well.
He made a lot of plays with his feet.
Well, Devin had a real good offseason.
He's a tough guy.
Scouting report.
And this guy loves football.
Game plan.
I think he's very knowledgeable. He's a good leader.
Film.
Getting guys lined up.
Situational awareness.
Protection points and route reads. And
end of the line, middle of the line, off the line.
He's a tough guy.
I mean, he can run, he can catch, he can pass protect.
He's got good quickness. He's a competitor.
He's a smart football player.
He works extremely hard.
He's a smart player. And
we're going to practice today. And
yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's probably a little bit like life.
Can't tell you it's like Disneyland or anything.
You know, in some ways, high school seems like yesterday.
That's a joke.
Yeah, the sun's been there for 5 billion years, and it'll be there for 5 billion more.
I like the way that Bill Belichick, I mean, you can hear him mentally giving up mid-answer. Like, he's like, goes into each press conference saying, you know what, I'm gonna try today. Today I'm gonna try to just make it through without just giving up on my life, just giving up on my coaching career. Like, that's the way it's gonna end for Bill Belichick, by the way. Like, that's how his coaching career is gonna end. He's gonna be at a press conference week 4, and he's gonna just leave mid-answer. Not even mid-question, mid-answer, going, you know what? And he'll just walk away, and then the Patriots will have a press release the next day saying Bill Belichick retired from coaching because of his inability to answer questions with any level of enthusiasm. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Jock Sports Talk. 1 hour down, 2 to go. Mitch Holtis joins us at 4:15 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 4:15 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Your Tuesday news break coming up in 20 minutes. Kevin Flaherty of 24 Sports joining us at 5 to talk some Big 12 football. But right now, it's time to talk to the voice of the Chiefs. Mitch Holtis joining us now on the program. Mitch, I got a fantasy football draft tonight. You care if I just pepper you with fantasy football questions for the next 15 minutes?
Oh, why not? I don't think it's going to stop you if I say no. My question for you is, what was that bump music you had? It looked like some from a 1960s game show or an old open for the Don Fambro show in 1973.
It might have been. I think we did pull that from the old Don Fambro show. We sifted through the archives to find that one.
Well, we're playing Missouri. I don't like Missouri much, and we don't. Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to bring this up to you yesterday, But I feel like this
would
be.
Did you find the Bud Moore show open? I'm in.
I've got a lot of good stories from David Lawrence on the Bud Moore era. And speaking of DL, I wish we would have brought this up to you yesterday when he was on, but I don't know if you knew this. Yesterday was the 154-year anniversary of Quantrill's raid of Lawrence, and I had DL going for about half an hour on that.
Oh, I'll go with you on that, too. I studied it pretty closely. I'm into all that, and I've actually studied a lot of the border atrocities both ways, going back and forth from the 1855 period to basically the end of the Civil War. But, yeah, there's a movie called Ride with the Devil. Tobey Maguire's in it. Jewel's in it. It was a high-budget film that was filmed around here, actually. It was thought to be, it was going to be a blockbuster, very authentic, very well-researched, and it's almost too authentic because the dialogue of the time, we like to look at history in 2017. We want to look at 1858 and look at it and put it in 2017 terms. If you were going to study it, you got to go back and kind of think what was this area like in 1858, 1860, in that case, 1864. But Ride with the Devil is a suggested, try to find it on Hulu, Netflix, if you can, because it will give you an idea of just how brutal those times were both ways. Going back and forth, it was awful.
So maybe when I get done reading Our Boys, which I started on Sunday evening, by the way.
Yeah, I did not ask you about that. Yeah, yeah. You did start? How far did you get?
Well, I'm a slow reader. I read at about a third grade level, so I'm about 40 pages in so far.
Where are you at in the story?
I just learned about the seniors who were challenged by the strength coach, and the one kid, Mick something, he went and pulled everybody. He went to the Pizza Hut. He pulled some kid out of a movie theater, and he was telling him that all of the weightlifting sessions were now mandatory for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, you're giving me chills going back. There's a lot of cool things in that book. I'm telling you, a lot of cool things. Now I got to give you a very sad note. I like to joke around, but this is a sad note. This will impact you as you read it. But there is a Travis Rempe was the fullback on that team, number 8. You're going to read about him now. You're only 40 pages in. Fullback, played both ways, linebacker, great wrestler. So he's one of the heroes of the 2008 team that you're reading about in Our Boys, that he was killed Sunday in a car wreck. Oh, and goodness. It has just devastated the community, just devastated him. Although he's been out of school now, where this is the fall of 17, a lot of the current Redmond football team, these are small communities, and they knew him well. So it's going to put in perspective now as you read on, because Rempe's all over in that book. But, man, it's a sad time. His funeral is actually Thursday in Smith Center.
That is sad news, and I can't wait to read more about him. And I'll give you my full report when I get it finished,
Hopefully
sooner than later. I'm going to try
it's
and put
it
on the
cool,
pace.
It's kind of cool, though, isn't it? I mean, it's so well written.
It is, man.
He's a New York Times writer, but you kind of get there, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I can see this. It's one of those life imitates art things. It's Drape did such a great job of writing it, but there's so many layers to the story there. And what, I don't want to give it away, but the 2007 team could have played 6A. They could have played in the Sunflower League. And I'm telling you, if you watch those guys play, Joe Winshuffle, who, big KU fan, but he played at Pitt State on their national title team. He was a stud. Braden Wilson played at K-State for 4 years. We drafted him. I mean, these guys were just a 6A team playing in 1A, 2A. The guys you're reading about who have to take over now to try to keep the streak going and are going through all these, how's this going to work and what are we going to do here? Because people are going, can they do it? Those are 2A guys. Okay, so I don't think there was a Division I football player in that group. Don't think so. But anyway, it just adds some intrigue to the story. But it's whether you love Smith Center or hate it, if you're into something that just you're like, okay, this is a really interesting read. Need to buy it. Because, what is it, $5 on Amazon?
Yeah, it cost me like $4.75.
Yeah, thanks.
So, well worth it.
Andy Reid loves it. I had to tell Andy about Travis Rempe today because I said, you remember the kid that's a fullback? And he loves the book. And I met him today, and he did not know about what happened to Travis on Sunday. I mean, his face got white. He now knows, because he knows what he wants to build in a football team with the Kansas City Chiefs. And whether it's Bill Snyder, David Beatty, or, you know, Odom at Missouri, you want to build what's in that book. And it's not a coincidence that they've been so successful there because of the culture that they have. And this year's team will be one to watch. You can just kind of keep an eye on them because they are very similar to the team you're reading about. Not uber talented, but they've got a chance.
Perhaps the only thing that Andy Reid and I have in common is that I guess I am in the process, but soon we will have something in common that we both have read Our Boys. So that's something to be proud of.
Well, no, he had Mr. Vahuska too for
Vendusca.
Vendusca. He had Vendusca for social studies at John Marshall High School in Los Angeles. He got that in common too.
We got the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, with us here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Now, you had your weekly Chiefs Kingdom radio show last night. One of the big topics of conversation was Chris Conley. We've talked about him and the great offseason that he's had in camp. Are we starting to see that materialize in some of these preseason games?
Starting to formulate, but what do we have? I still can't tell you. I mean, he's done most of the things you would want him to do in camp to put him in position to do it, but now we've got to see it in the regular season. You know, the first week, we've been doing this a month. The first week I was talking about elite guys, and then I brought up the glue guys, you know, the Whit Merrifields or the Chiefs. And then I brought up last week the young guys, and this week kind of the guys, you know, I mentioned guys that if they just have a little bit of improvement, Demetrius Harris, I talked about him. But Conley is now the epitome, probably exhibit A, of a player if he just makes a slight jump. Doesn't have to be significant, but just a slight jump. And this, it can mean the difference between two or three wins and an AFC championship. And I kid you not, because we're seeing other pieces come together. We know about the lid coming off the offense because of Tyreek Hill's route running and deep ability. We know about the other guys, but we don't know who's going to be a consistent, just grind it out and get you 12 yards when you need 12 yards. And that really needs to be Chris Conley. When you look at it, last year he had 69 targets, 44 catches. He had a 13% drop ratio. So, I mean, you're just asking him, you know, cut that in half, get some first downs, and it will – I'm telling you, Nick, it can make a giant impact on this team.
What is being asked of Chris Conley, knowing that we've talked about this in the past, that really your number two receiver is going to be Travis Kelce. After that, you know, Spencer Ware is going to be up there near the top as well. So whoever's at that other wide receiver spot, whether it's Conley, Wilson, whoever else you want to throw out there, what is being asked of that person?
Well, of him specifically is that God has given you a lot of talent. You have incredible vertical. You've got good straight-ahead speed. Now can you be a precise route runner all the time? Can you win in the two-minute offense where Andy Reid, we can't stop, and Andy Reid's going to look at his laminated sheet and come up with the perfect play? You have to win a battle because you're going no huddle, and you can't stop and reconfigure the grid. You've got to win a battle. I've got to beat you at the line of scrimmage. Catch the ball in traffic, first down, Chiefs, keep it moving. You got a brand new set of downs while the clock's moving, and then do it again, and then do it again. That's what the Chiefs need from Chris Conley.
As you mentioned, I mean, talk about the God-given ability that he's been given, physical attributes completely off the charts. You've spent a lot of time around him now going into his third season. What do you think this guy's ceiling is with this organization and as a receiver in the league?
Well, personally, and from an emotional and mental standpoint, you want your daughter dating a guy like this. He could be president of the United States. I'm seriously. When you're around him for 5 minutes, they're going, that might be one of the most impressive dudes I've ever met. It's what's holding him back, and I can't answer that. I don't know. From just exploding, and I don't mean exploding and becoming Odell Beckham. You know, we were playing Cincinnati last week, and I was looking at Brandon LaFell. Well, the rookie that they had, the second-year guy coming in from Pitt, that I believe was first in the NFL in third-down catches for rookies, 4 first downs. This week, when you look at Seattle, like a Doug Baldwin. Doug Baldwin's not – you're not looking at him as A.J. Green,
But Doug Baldwin helped Seattle win a ton of games because you're not guessing on Doug Baldwin. Hey, can Doug do it this week? You know he can. And that's what the Chiefs need from Chris Conley. I have all the faith in the world in him. Got to see it. Now, this camp has been he's moving around the bases, but he needs to come home, and he needs to do it every week. This league, you cannot do it on October the 9th and then disappear until November the 15th. It does not work that way.
He's the voice of the Chiefs. Mitch Holt is joining us here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. So you've thrown a few more in yesterday. Yesterday you were really active with the high school mascots. You were just firing them off left and right. You're up to technically 62-0 so far on the season. You've had some good starts.
Let's stop here a second. Can we talk a second?
Yeah, what's up?
Okay. So I'm thinking yesterday because you got DL going on this Altoona Midway Jet team that had to play like an incredible schedule. It would be like KU this year having to play the SEC West. Okay, that's what that's like. Altoona Midway's playing the Odishe and Humboldt, like half the kids. Okay, but then he's talking about Mark Dobbins. Remember I mentioned Mark Dobbins,
yeah.
You know, playing, okay, who married Annie Morrison. Morrison Green and Salina. Whoops, the same family that look on your KU cross-country and track roster. Cameron Gelder. Cameron Gelder's mom, a Morrison from Salina, tied right into the Dobbins and the other side. It all comes together. So now the future of the KU cross-country team and long-distance group comes all the way around to Mark Dobbins playing quarterback for Humboldt against David Lawrence. You see how this is all full circle?
Yeah,
it's
like,
30 for 30.
It's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, except it's the 6 degrees of David Lawrence, right?
Absolutely. It's all of the Bourne Identity shows. It's all coming together here. And when he said, oh, that guy from Humboldt, I go, Mark Dobbins, he played with Steve Henson at K-State. And now he's got these, you know, great kids, and he married the Morrison girl whose sister was a Crimson girl, and then the other Morrison gal, you know, has this fantastic runner that now runs for KU. And, I mean, it all just snaps together.
Wow, it's perfect.
Kind of like pizza.
Yep. Well, talk about pizza. I mean, if you want to talk about it snapping together, Jason Bourne, I know he's more of an Ethan Hunt type, but that falls right under Bruce Collinsworth's category.
No, but you know what? He's – okay. Collinsworth, it's like continuing ed. I told you he's Ethan Hunt, but they never stop learning. So that the screen he's got up there that you can eat and dine in at 9th and Mississippi if you want. You just don't have to have Collinsworth bringing the Alamo special to your house. You can dine in. You'll see him in the afternoon when it's a little slow, like about 3 p.m. or 1500 in the military time. He'll be watching all of the Bourne Identities, just back to back to back, looking for the next edge.
Yep, just training, just like Andy Reid, you know, watching film from last week.
That's it. You put your oars in the water, you're going backwards, man. You ain't gonna stay right there. Sorry.
All right, up first today, Ellenwood High School.
The Ellenwood Eagles. Just east of Great Bend. Oh gosh, they've had some. They've had some good teams. Right now, they're kind of. I just met their athletic director. I spoke in Great Bend over the summer, and this guy's a dynamo. He's trying to get them going and get the Eagles red and blue to get their wings going again. Right there on the old Santa Fe Trail.
Emporia High School.
The Emporia Spartans. Yeah, the Spartans play in one of the great football venues. You know, they share it with Emporia State. But it's a really cool Friday night. They've had so many. I think Steve Smith played at KU, was out of there. I think it was Steve Smith. Joe Bob Clemens played at K-State on their 98 team that could have won played for the national title. He was from Emporia. You just go down through the years, and they've had a gob of athletes. Yep.
Central Plains.
Central Plains Oilers. Yeah, the Oilers. This is one of my favorite nicknames because this is the tie-in of Claflin. Used to be the Wildcats, Jackie Stiles, remember her?
Of course.
Wade Trophy winner, probably the greatest women's basketball player in Kansas history. Okay, Claflin, great tradition. Whoops, they join now with the Quivira Heights Thunderbirds, who was really a combination of Bushton and Holyrood and Geneseo. They all come together to make Central Plains. Well, what are you going to call them? The Tigers? The Eagles? No, it's an oil-producing country. It's right there in those fertile oil fields. Let's call them the Oilers. And put the old Houston Oilers, you know, oil derrick on the helmet. Love the Central Plains Oilers, and they are a factor in 1A, 2A.
Finally, Hartford.
Oh, the Hartford Jaguars. Yeah, Hartford Jaguars in the Lyon County League. This one is perplexing to me. I've been to Hartford several times, near Emporia, yet to see a Jaguar. Have you seen one there?
Never.
Yeah, I'm looking around going, where's the Jaguar? Is Mark Brunell around here somewhere? The Jaguars of Hartford. Where'd we get that one? Don't know. But that's who they are, the Hartford Jaguars.
Man, you ran through those high schools like KU runs through Texas Tech on a big Monday, man. Just knock them,
well,
set them up, knock them down.
This is the early February home game with Baylor, where it's like 2 versus 6 in the country, and everybody's like, well, Baylor, maybe. And it's always like an 89-54 game. And Scott Drew's like, I'm just happy. Get out of here, you know? So that's what this game was.
Well, you're encroaching upon Geno Auriemma-like territory, John Wooden-esque. So congratulations. Keep it going, man.
And Curtis Townsend is putting together a cruise up the car. I just found this out. You know, he's trying to sell me. He tries to sell everything. Uh-huh. He tried to sell me a suite at the Sun for the eclipse. I'm like, I don't think that works. Now he's trying to sell a cruise that goes up the Kaw. You get in right there in North Lawrence, and you go all the way up to, I think, like Lecompton and get out. So it's like $1,000. I'm like, dude, I don't think I'm going to do that. But anyway.
Thanks as always, Mitch. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you, Nick.
All righty, that's the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Up next, it's your Tuesday news break.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwartz on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
5 o'clock hour here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwartz, and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. We'll go to 6 o'clock tonight. Royals baseball takes over at 6:30. First pitch between Kansas City and Colorado at 7:15 right here on KLWN. But right now, let's talk some Big 12 football as we welcome on Kevin Flaherty of 24/7 Sports. Kevin, how you been, man?
Doing great, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to hop on with me today. I'm sure you saw earlier in the week the first preseason AP top 25 poll was released. Half of the Big 12 represented in there. How many teams from the conference do you think have legitimate shots to make it into the college football playoff this year?
College football playoff, I realistically think it's one. And the reason I say that is, you know, I know there's been a little bit of a love affair for a lot of people with Oklahoma State, you know, particularly with the coaching change in Norman. But I just don't see Oklahoma State being able to beat Oklahoma twice. And that's exactly what Oklahoma State would have to do in order to make the college football playoff. They'd have to win late in the season once Oklahoma has already adjusted to Lincoln Riley's play style and, you know, the new coach and all of those things. And then they'd have to come back and beat them, what, a week later? So, yeah, I think that's a really tall order, is asking Oklahoma State to beat Oklahoma twice. I do think that Oklahoma could pull off the reverse. And so when you're looking at it, you know, from a perspective across the league, I really feel like Oklahoma is the only team in the Big 12 that does have really that legitimate shot at the college football playoff.
And I'm somebody who is pretty bullish on Oklahoma State this year. Conversely, I'm not that high on Oklahoma. I know they've got a ton of talent, maybe the best quarterback in the country, and a really, really good-looking head coach in Lincoln Riley, who happens to be my doppelganger. But I just don't think that it's all going to happen in year number one for him. I know we've seen David Shaw, a guy at Stanford, who kind of got it all figured out in year number one. But it seems to me like if I'm not high on Oklahoma and I am high on Oklahoma State, and I guess when you put it like that, it does seem pretty unlikely that they would be able to beat Oklahoma twice. Maybe I shouldn't feel all that good about the Big 12 being represented in the playoff this year.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a down year as far as teams at the top of the Big 12, and you could probably throw Oklahoma in there. I don't think that Oklahoma is probably quite as talented as they have been when they've competed for championships in the past. But at the same time, I think the championships are won in the trenches. And when you look across the league and you look at Oklahoma's schedule specifically, I think that there's only really one game on Oklahoma's schedule where you can say they're going to be outmatched up front, and that includes both the offensive and defensive lines, and that's Ohio State. And when you get within the Big 12, I think that's a lot of people tend to look at the skill position players. Obviously, Baker Mayfield's terrific. They've had, you know, a great run of wide receivers. You do kind of wonder, who the next guy in that wide receiving group is going to be. But for me, it all starts and ends up front, and I think that Oklahoma has the best offensive line and the best defensive line in the conference, and probably the best front seven in the Big 12 when you look at guys like Obo Okoronkwo.
There you go. Nice job.
And Caleb Kelly and some of the guys that they're lining up there. And so I do think that Oklahoma has the tools to win the Big 12 yet again this year. But the reason that I think that they're better than teams like Oklahoma State or even, you know, to Kansas State is another team that I think is going to be up there is I think Oklahoma's just flat going to be better up front.
Now, you talk about the talent discrepancy between Oklahoma this year and what they've had in some of their better years, but overall, when you look at the Big 12 as a whole, how would you characterize the talent discrepancy between the Big 12 and some of the better conferences or just plainly the better programs in the country?
I think the Big 12 is maybe a little deeper in the middle right now, especially than the league has been the last few years. Yes, there were five teams in the top 25. You had TCU basically at number 26. So you can say that six of the league's teams basically were top 25 teams. I don't think the Big 12 is as strong at the very top of the league as a league like the SEC or certainly the ACC with teams like Florida State and Clemson. I think that's probably your main difference between the Big 12 is not as many teams up at the top of the league. I think the middle of the league is maybe a little more spread out, and I do think the bottom part of the Big 12 is going to be significantly better than it has been in years past. When you look at teams like Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Kansas, I don't think that there's going to be one or two teams that you look at and say, oh, man, those are just absolutely awful and historically awful football teams.
We've got Kevin Flaherty joining us here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Do you have a pick for your surprise team in the Big 12 this year?
You know, it's funny because it's almost hard to list them as a surprise, but I'm a little bit surprised that Kansas State isn't getting more love. You know, Bill Snyder has that terrific record when he has a returning quarterback. I think he's won at least 10 games every season he's had a returning quarterback at Kansas State except for one season. So, I mean, that tells you something right there. They've got some really nice defensive pieces when you look at Reggie Walker and some of the guys they have on that side of the ball. But offensively, they should be just terrific. When you look at Alex Barnes in that backfield, you know, really started to emerge last year late in the season. When you look at a guy like Byron Pringle on the outside, and now they added Carlos Strickland, who is pretty much a universal four-star recruit out of Dallas Skyline. He's transferred in from Cal. And then that offensive line, they do return, I think, four of those five starters. And so when you put all those pieces together, I'm a little bit surprised Kansas State's not getting a little more talked about. TCU's a team that would seem to be poised for a bounce-back season, but I don't know that TCU is as talented as TCU has been in the past, and particularly when you look at defensively. I don't see the pieces there for the lockdown-type defense that Garrett. And so the team that would be a surprise, except people pick them every single year, would maybe be Texas.
See,
because Texas has a chance to bounce back from, you know, being a 500-type program to being a pretty good-type team. But you can't really call them a surprise, given that everybody is picking them to be a pretty good football team.
Well, it's all relative, right? Like, that's kind of what you're getting
exactly at.
It's all relative to what your expectations are. Are you comparing them to what they've been over the past 5 years, or are you comparing them to what historically we expect to see from Texas? Because I feel like Texas is getting the benefit of they've got the hot young coach in Tom Herman, and people really believe in him more so than they did when Charlie Strong came around. I don't see Texas being a top 25 team in the country, at least this year. Like, I think Tom Herman is going to take them back to where they expect to be, but I just don't see it this year. It seems like maybe you think that they're pegged right about where you think they should be.
You know, I think that Texas is going to be solid this year, but I do see them as being sort of in outside edges of the top 25 team. Like, I wouldn't necessarily see them as a top 15 type program. And, you know, if you saw Horns Digest, Chip Brown picked them in the college football playoff. And so there are some people that certainly have really high expectations for them. The thing about it is, I mean, for the last several years, even when they were losing under Charlie Strong, they might have won the best looking team off the bus award in terms of you look at them and you say, well, that looks like Texas should probably look over there. And then the game would start and things didn't go as well for them as certainly Kansas fans know. But you look at what Texas's schedule is this year. I think there are some sort of sneaky tough games and some sneaky tough stretches in there. And I do agree with you. I don't think the pieces are necessarily there for them, for everybody to hop up screaming, Texas is back, you know, and pull out the trumpets and everything. But I do think that this is a team that can legitimately be 7-5, 8-4, and sort of be in that 25-35 range where at the end of the year you're looking at them and saying, Tom Herman has a lot to build off of for year two and has a lot, you know, a lot of positive momentum.
He's Kevin Flaherty. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. You may have already answered this when I asked you how many teams you thought could legitimately challenge for a spot in the playoff, but if you think Oklahoma is the only team that could do that, does that mean you think Oklahoma is the only team who could win the Big 12 this year?
You know, I do. With the championship game format, I don't think that Oklahoma State is the only team that could win the Big 12, just because, you know, the old cliche, anything can happen on a Saturday. You know, if Oklahoma beats K-State in the regular season and then they wind up on a Saturday in December, Kansas State could beat Oklahoma. And the same thing goes for Oklahoma State. I just don't think that Oklahoma State is going to beat Oklahoma twice. But with that championship game, as we've seen, you know, all of us, I think, have followed the Big 12 pretty much since the dawn of time. And there's just too many instances where a team entered the Big 12 title game as a major underdog and still came away with a win and cost a Big 12 team a shot at a national championship. And I think that, and so I do think that there's maybe three teams or so that could win the Big 12, but, you know, I don't see anybody putting together the entire resume that it would take to go to the college football playoff with the exception of Oklahoma.
Well, what do you think is the likelihood that KU finishes in any spot besides last place in the Big 12?
That's a tough question. I think that Kansas is going to be significantly better. I think Texas Tech is going to be significantly worse. And I think part of the reason for that, we've seen in the early Chiefs games, you know, Patrick Mahomes has been terrific. But I don't know that Kansas is going to topple Texas Tech and be that team. I think Iowa State's going to be quite a bit better. They might even compete for a bowl berth. And so Tech and Kansas are sort of the teams that I see, you know, in those 9-10 spots. I would give Kansas maybe a 25% chance, and especially with that game. That game's in Lawrence this year, correct?
The Tech game, yes.
Yeah. I do think that there's, say, a 25% chance or so that Kansas could wind up in ninth and Texas Tech 10th, but it's hard to see Kansas climbing much higher than that. I do think that Kansas is going to put the sort of team on the field this year and compete at a higher level this year to where, you know, even casual watchers will be able to walk away and say, okay, you know, Kansas is in a better spot than they were a year ago.
And if you're right and Texas Tech does take a big step backwards, I mean, I can't imagine any scenario in how Cliff Kingsbury would keep his job beyond this year.
Yeah, I don't see any scenario where he would keep his job in that either. And it's tough because you look at the Red Raiders and all their defensive struggles, and then you say, okay, well, what's going to fix them? And I don't know that the solution is there on campus. And even if Nick Szymanek and the offense, you know, get things humming, they're probably going to take a step back offensively. And so you're looking at a team that, quite frankly, wasn't that good a year ago, taking another step back and being in a spot where I think Texas Tech alums are going to are going to sit up and basically say, look, Cliff, you had a great shot. You know, we had some moments, but it's time to move on. And it'll be interesting to see who some of the candidates for that job would be if they could lure somebody like a Chad Morris or somebody like that, or whether it's going to be really tough for them to find a coach that's going to succeed in Lubbock.
If that were the case and this does all happen and Cliff Kingsbury would be released after this year, do you think like we could look back on that era and say that he actually did himself a disservice by being so good right away? Because he went 8 games in his first year, and ever since then he's just failed to live up to the hype and the expectations that he kind of created for himself.
Sure, won 8 games his first year.
Won a bowl too, right?
Went ahead and beat Arkansas, what, in year 2 or year 3, to where you thought that, you know, hey, you know, maybe he's going to have some staying power there. And it just didn't happen for them on the defensive side of the ball. And it's funny because people look back at the Mike Leach era and all they think of is offense, offense, offense. But go look at the All-Big 12 teams from those eras, and you're going to see an awful lot of really good pass rushers, and you're going to see some pretty good defensive backs and guys that wound up making that defense at least respectable to the point where if Texas Tech scored 40 points, they were going to win the ball game. And that's been the issue under Cliff Kingsbury, is they can score 42 points and just as easily lose that ball game. And that hasn't always been the case for Texas Tech, even when they've been high powered offensively.
He's Kevin Flaherty. You can check out all of his work at 247sports.com. Appreciate the time, Kevin. We'll be talking very soon as college football season is fast approaching, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nate.
All righty. Thank you. That's Kevin Flaherty of 247 Sports. I'm Nick Schwert. Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.